Joining me on the March edition of Our Town is Monique Despain. She is running for the 4th Congressional District seat in Congress here in Oregon, and she is with us on the program today. And good day to you. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, George. Doing well. How are you?
I am doing pretty darn good, and I always look forward to election season. It's always fun because not only do I get to talk to folks like yourself and meet new people, but it's always a great time to remember that we have this wonderful opportunity to have our say in how our government's run. And I know that this is your second attempt at doing this. What is happening in your world these days that makes this an even more important time to run?
Well, it's true. It is an honor to participate in the political process in this great country where we all have an opportunity to choose to step up and speak on behalf of our neighbors. And that's what I'm doing. And I think it is challenging when you're not a career politician to jump into the fray, which is what I did, kind of short notice in late 2023. And while I had amazing support of a great campaign team, we fell short in large part on funding. But the message remains the same, that Oregon, most Oregonians don't feel heard by their elected representatives, that especially along the coast. We have two-thirds of the coastline in our district from the California border to the top of Lincoln County. They still do not feel heard. Businesses are still struggling with onerous policies from the state and the feds. And my message of public safety is still resonating with the people of the district. And of course, all of that is affected by my third major issue is holding government accountable to be transparent and accountable to us and tell us what they're doing with their tax dollars. So my message remains the same. I'm determined to not fall short on cash this time. And so we had an amazing, we launched October 1st for our rematch. And so the Q4 of 2025, we closed out outraising the incumbent Democrat Val Hoyle by over 300%. And that turns out that's pretty rare. Only 5 Republican challengers in the entire country outraised a sitting Democrat in Congress. And 3 of those 5 are self-funded millionaires, and I'm not one of those. So just 2 of us are fighting. I don't know who the other one is. I should find out. But I'm so proud that Oregonians heard the call that I'm available for this job, and they all stepped up. And yeah, we raised nearly $400,000 in 3 months, and we're still going strong into Q1.
You know, there's a belief, I think, for some people that the district skews heavily Democrat. But I noticed from living here for the past 10 to 12 years, it's pretty evenly matched here. So the understanding that it's been run by a Democrat for so long, I'm not sure what that means. What do you have to say to, you know, kind of get those, you know, few that might be on one side or the other to come your way?
Right. Isn't it too bad we have to talk about being on one side or the other?
I know, it's terrible.
I'm on the side of Americans and Oregonians who want to get back to a prosperous economy. I'm on the side of regardless of party affiliation, of delivering our government, delivering public safety in our communities, of eliminating the fentanyl crisis in our streets, you know, through law enforcement and funding law enforcement. And I'm for stopping the smoke season that we experience with our federal forests. 60% of our district, 60% of the forests are federally mismanaged. And I don't really care if it's the Democrats or the Republican so-called leadership of the past that has failed us. I'm just reaching all voters. But you're absolutely right. It's just a legend that everyone's a Democrat. The largest voting block is the non-affiliated voter. And in our, we reached to those people and our message resonated with them. You know, in that last campaign, going into that, I kind of always wondered, would any warm body with an R get the same results? And we proved that's wrong. And I think that's what's, you know, the momentum is building, that we just need a representative, an independent voice for Oregon. And so that's what I provide. I know the issues of the district, and I'm learning more and more about it every day. In between fundraising, I'm out at local communities, meeting with businesses, having gatherings, and And I'm proud to be the one that's raising the concerns of Oregonians, regardless of their party affiliation. So, yeah, the largest voting bloc is the non-affiliated voter who generally wants small, efficient government, staying out of our personal business, staying out of how we raise our families and educate them, and just funding the basics like national security, local law enforcement, transportation, a efficient transportation system, or, you know, roads, infrastructure. And so those people can really make the difference this election by just turning out to vote and not despairing and thinking that this is all about Republicans and Democrats fighting over, ideological things rather than just the business of government.
Well, I think what you said rings true to a lot of people that, you know, there's this sense that we want security. We want to be able to, you know, pay for our rent, pay for our mortgage, pay for our groceries, keep gas in the car. Mm-hmm. Being a member of Congress is an important part, but it's a part overall that's going to require a lot of help from other congressional areas. How do you work? How do you figure on when you get in or if you get in to working with these other ones to kind of send the same message and all get on the same page about this?
Well, that's a good question, because I think that is a large part of the problem. I just would urge my partners in the congressional delegation to remember who we serve, and that is the constituents of our districts. And the housing crisis is a crisis all across Oregon. And I can't imagine that any, regardless of party affiliation, that they don't want to address it. But, I mean, you know, after the last campaign, I went back to my job with Kevin Mannix at Common Sense for Oregon and his law firm. And he's on the Housing and Homelessness Committee in the state legislature. So I did a real deep dive examination of the governor's purported agenda. And it's just been such a failure. You know, what I noticed from the governor to the legislature to people in Congress, they just talk a good story and they don't deliver results. I come from a world where I had to deliver results. Throughout my 35 years, I went to law school at Willamette University. I've been practicing law, bringing people who in conflict together to solve problems. And so I do know how to listen to the other side and meet, you know, see what our common needs are. And I just can't imagine anyone is in Congress right now who doesn't understand and want to deliver national security, for example, the secure border. My opponent actually is an advocate for an open border. And I don't think that's going to age well for her. She continues to advocate for that. But housing, everyone says they want to deliver more housing to the American people in Oregon. I'm going to be the one who considers and supports actual solutions. And, you know, I talk about that on the campaign trail, and so many things we could be working on in Oregon that we're not, but some good things are happening in forest management, for example, that could be a positive thing for building, you know, having our own local timber resources applied for good right here in Oregon, for example. But I've also in the military as a JAG officer and advisor to commanders for many years. I've just been working with people, mediating, negotiating, come to the table prepared with facts and solutions. I'm not going to be a representative who just comes to the table with my arms crossed and my heels dug in saying, no, I don't like your ideas. I always have worked in an environment where you come to the table with proposed solutions and then you work it out.
Over the years, I've interviewed many in the Congress and Senate from different states, that first timers that went in there and came back to me after their first term or their first year in term, and they said, wow, I had no idea. Obviously, you're going to meet some expectations, or you're going to see some things that you might not have been prepared for. What concerns you most about what you're hearing out of DC right now?
Well, the gridlock, of course, is frustrating. And while I tell you that I'm well seasoned in negotiations and mediations and problem solvings, not with 435 people, you know, so that would be challenging. And what I've always done is look for fellow, I'm at a loss for the word here, but, you know, people who are interested in solving the same, like-minded, or not necessarily like-minded, but just that we have the same agenda. We want to solve the problem. So I look for advocates of for positive change, right? So you look for where you can find support. So I'm good at doing that. Reaching out across the aisle is the expression we use in Congress, but you find support where you find it. That's happened in my campaign. I found amazing support where I least expected it, and not found support where I kind of assumed I would get it. And so that's kind of normal when you're out there in the ring on any worthy mission. So I would carry on with that. But I think what's most important is, as a representative, I intend to communicate with you, the media, and with my constituency, and explain my votes. And you know, I think just having that open, transparent conversation with your constituents, I think most people are reasonable, and they understand that none of us believe, I don't believe as a candidate, you know, Monique goes to Washington, D.C. and solves the world problems. But you need somebody who has the right principles, who represents the principles of the district, to be at that table, no matter how large it is. You know, I hope to get on relevant committees. So that'll narrow the battlefield a little bit. But it's about communication, not only in D.C. and just come back and say, wow, that was so much harder than I thought. I'll tell you why. And I really do believe all progress begins with telling the truth. And so I will come back and tell the truth about my experiences and my interactions with our own congressional delegation. And I think the voters are just craving information that's not spin or just lies. We actually get a lot of lies from our elected representatives, and that's not what voters deserve. So I plan to deliver the truth and share what we're fighting for in Washington, D.C., and how it's received.
Now, this might be a little weird topic here, but how do you see, I mean, watching some, especially in social media and things like that, you know, you see these deep fakes, you see AI creating a different world for us now, and it even affects politicians because someone can do a video that looks like them, sounds like them, and a lot of people don't do their deep research to find out if this stuff is accurate or not. What do you feel is the way to combat this, and hopefully, you know, you won't be affected by this in your campaign run, or your competitor for that matter, but how do you look at that as problematic, or as, you know, needs systematic change?
We need systematic change. But that said, I'm going into the ring as it is. So we do have a very dysfunctional political industrial complex. So the answer to your question is, I am raising enough money to be able to tell the truth through radio and TV commercials. My opponent laid low, didn't really engage, wouldn't make any public, very, very limited public engagements, and then ran $1 million in lying commercials for hardworking people that don't have time to do the deep dives on research and stuff. That said, I do urge everybody to look at my website and look at my social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, all of that, and then my website at MoniqueForCongress.com, my press releases. You know, we all are adults that need to take personal responsibility for our vote. We need to vote, number one, regardless of how we all feel about election integrity. Do vote. Encourage your family and friends to vote. And then do the minimum, my voter's pamphlet is a stark contrast to what you'll see our congresswoman finds important, you know, so you can read that. You can show it to other people and then go to my website. But people believing political television ads. Now, I vow to never lie. I mean, I hired my team, and I'm the one who authorizes everything that comes and represents my campaign to the people. So we have a lying congresswoman. I expect she'll do it again. But all of my so I'm raising enough money to make sure my truthful advertising about who I am and what I plan to do for the district is launched across the district with television ads.
What would you like to say to the Democrats out there who may be really leery of what they've seen in the Republican Party over the last decade and are concerned with maybe everybody siding with a certain group of Republicans and not being concerned about voting for a Republican at this juncture? What would you say? I mean, I know you talk about transparency in that, but just a word to them that say, look, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. Such a great question. I just had this conversation with somebody just an hour ago. I am a mom of two young men, and they're the reason I'm running. I served in the military for 30 years. I understand national security, and I know how much has been given for us to have the amazing free country that we have that allows us to speak freely and be, you know, proud and loud about how we feel about something. You know, I know what has been given for that. And I know we're losing it if we don't fight for it. Vigilance is what we've always had to maintain this great country. And we cannot stop being vigilant. And I want my sons to be in a free, prosperous America when they're my age. And that's why I'm running. And so that's my core values are very fundamental American values. Basically, the blueprint of the Constitution is my blueprint. It's the one I took an oath to as an officer, and it's the same oath for a congressional representative. But the interesting thing that came up earlier today, one of the things I'm doing is reaching out to the neighborhood associations all through Lane County, not HOAs, but these neighborhood associations. It's kind of interesting. They actually have a nexus. They get a little bit of funding from the county and the city. I think it's from the city. But anyway, I got a call from one in the Whitaker, which is a neighborhood absolutely plagued with homelessness, addiction, and crime. Terrible. And I reached out to go to that, to go to their monthly meeting or quarterly. And the head of the association, you know, nice lady, said I was welcome. My team sent her our information about the campaign. And she called back and said she just wouldn't be able to support somebody who had the endorsement of Speaker Johnson in 2024. And it's really a sad thing because she's a representative of a neighborhood association full of concerned citizens who she just wants to snuff out that opportunity for me to come and talk to them and tell them I'm making myself available as a representative who really could. And really, in my heart, that is one of the biggest issues, the homelessness, the addicted, people dying in our neighborhoods. It's been a strain on law enforcement. It's been a strain on business owners. It's truly one of my primary top concerns for Lane County. And, you know, I'll have a good conversation with her, but that's an example of how if the aperture closes and you're just not willing to recognize we need change, and this is what is offered right now. You know, there's no other Republican running for this seat, and I don't know who else is running. There's really no challenger to Val Hoyle except for me, and that's one of the reasons I'm doing it, because we are just 180 on all of these degrees. You won't hear her talking about fentanyl deaths in the district. And so, and the homelessness and such, it is a federal issue. It does have a federal issue. There are millions, if not billions of dollars coming into Oregon to address the issue. But I meet people every day who want help and they can't access that system. And if you don't want to talk to me because I'm a Republican, I think that's a really tragic, tragic outcome. Don't you?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think everybody needs to converse. That's one of the big things. Hey,
now that I have to add, I get calls all the time from Democrats. I had Democrats endorse me last time. I have Democrat elected officials supporting me and Democrat donors. And interestingly, a lot of my Democrats come from that homeless industrial complex, people who truly have worked with the homeless and as counselors, social workers and such. And they see what how disingenuous the current agendas have been on resolving that issue, and they're voting for me.
We talked about the drug issues and fentanyl and stuff like that, and even the border. Without turning Oregon into the wild, wild west where justice is swift and certain, how do we speed up the processes? How do you, as a congresswoman, speed up the processes of getting justice and getting things to happen? Because I see how slowly things turn. I mean, we may know that there's a crack house in a particular neighborhood. We may know that there's drug dealings go on there, but it seems it takes forever for the justice system to come around and shutting these places down. How can you in Congress help that situation to become more swift?
Well, right now I'm just a citizen like you, a concerned citizen like you. But even still, like this afternoon, I'm going to the Deflection Center, Lane County. Eugene is one of several counties that has put some funding and resources into when a person's arrested, they have an option to deflect to rehabilitation, you know, to get them in the right place instead of in jail and into the justice system that way. They're still part of it. Anyway, I am well received as a candidate and learning all I can. Also, my work as a lawyer in Oregon for many years and with Kevin Mannix on public safety issues. The Oregon legislature has a supermajority of Democrats who have for many years very deliberately undermined the criminal justice system. So what you see is catch and release. You see cashless bail. And then you saw Measure 110, where they actually decriminalized the use of drugs at all. You know, those are all deliberate policies by state representatives elected by the people. So again, you got to decide, am I only going to vote because it's a Democrat, or am I going to pay attention to their policies that they're passing? They just passed a law that's really bad for business. They wanted to detach the federal tax code from the state tax code. And that's another bad decision for business. They know they're driving businesses out of Oregon at a record state, record numbers, and they stock it to them on now they can't take advantage of the things in the federal code, right? Yep. So these are policies passed by it just unfortunately. I mean, it's not all Democrats, but it's been all Democrats. And so, like I said, all progress begins with telling the truth. So you can see on my website, I did a letter to the editor at a local Lookout, Springfield, Eugene, where I highlighted how our congresswoman is attacking law enforcement, both local and federal, at the same time that a Colombian burglary ring was arrested. Did you hear about that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In Eugene, over at least 20 that we know of, 20 homes were burglarized to the tune of like their whole life savings. A very sophisticated burglary ring. That was after a years long, you know, expensive investigation. They detained these guys. They're in jail, and they had to release them because of our Oregon release guidelines. And thank God, ICE was there to nab a couple of them. Some of them have fled the area because they were released on bail. They were severe high flight risks. But anyway. I'm doing my best to tell those stories. I told those stories in my job. My boss and I, we sued Governor Kate Brown when she was releasing convicted felons before they completed their sentences. And I mean, serious criminals. My clients were the survivors of murder victims who took exception to the governor just washing away their duly earned conviction and releasing them into our streets. You know, that's happening in California, too. It's the governor. It's the Democrat state legislature releasing pedophiles. They think if you're 50 years old, you should be released from prison, whether you've done a third of your life sentence. They just released someone who had three life sentences, and they released him after 23 years because of a law that said that they'd be released at 50 years old. So I could go on. It's about educating the voters about the laws that are in place and who is passing those laws. Right now, our target for the people is Val Hoyle, and her votes are very dangerous for Oregon and for the United States.
MoniqueForCongress.com. That's the website, correct?
That's right.
All right. Monique Despain, thank you so much for hanging out today. I really appreciate it. A lot of great information there, and hope our listeners will give it a honest listen.
Yeah, well, I want to tell you, I'll be at the home show on Friday afternoon. I know you've put a lot of work into that, so I'm looking forward to that. I will swing by for the pulled pork.
Yeah.
And then we're having a meet and greet at the Ramblin' Rose on March 6th, that same day, from 6 to 8 p.m. And I welcome people who want to come and learn more about this great effort to bring common sense representation to the 4th District.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, George.